It's time for Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk on News Talk 1400 WDWS Champaign Urbana, where we talk all things Illini along with other area national sports. Join the program by calling 217-356-9397 or send a text to the Castle Heating and Cooling text line 217-351-5357. You can also email us at talk@wdws.com. Now, here are your hosts, Lauren Tate and Steve Kelly.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk with you from now until 11 o'clock. Phone line is open, 356-9397. Got four guests lined up for you, plenty to talk about, but also plenty of time for you to get in if you would like to on this Saturday morning. It's dry now, but it was kind of wet overnight, a little stormy here in central Illinois. Mr. Tate, how you doing this morning?
Doing well.
A lot to talk about today. In case you hadn't heard, Albert Pujols is spending the weekend
really?
In St. Louis. Cardinals playing the Angels, interleague game last night, and a lot of pomp and circumstance, so to speak, about Albert's return to St. Louis. Will Leach, one of our guests coming up to start the second hour of the show, wrote about that return this week and was there last night. He'll join us to tell us more about that and how everything went. They had a false alarm go off in the stadium.
Yeah, what do you think that was?
Don't know what it was, but
a
malfunction.
Leaving. Yeah.
A malfunction of some kind. And that was coincidentally timed right after his first plate appearance.
Yeah.
It was kind of a...
Which didn't last long, by the way.
Didn't.
One pitch.
And the ovation didn't last as long as a lot of people thought it might. And that was basically controlled. The beginning of it was controlled by Yadier Molina. The end of it was controlled by Albert Pujols.
Yeah, he wanted to get it on, get the game on.
He stepped in the box, swung at the first pitch. I thought he had a home run, but he flew out to center field. Cardinals ended up winning the ball game 5-1. More on that coming up a little bit later on. Earlier yesterday, the Cubs lost to the Mets 5-4. Cubs are back in first place with a 41-34 record. Milwaukee lost for the sixth straight time. The Reds, who have won six straight, beat the Brewers 11-7. So the Cubs have a game-and-a-half lead over the Milwaukee Brewers. The Cardinals are only two games back at 39-36. I don't know what we've learned at this point on this June 22nd, how good or how mediocre the Central Division is.
Well, there's no question that the Brewers and Cubs have backed up somewhat to keep the Cardinals, who are just three games over 500, in what I would call contention. Certainly they're in contention when you're this close. But the problem with the whole wild card thing, when you start studying, there's so many possibilities. I mean, there are a lot of teams that are around 500 right now that could be in the wild card with just a week of streaks.
Yeah, it's way too early to look at that, but you look at it anyway. It's just kind of fun.
Yeah.
Cardinals are only half game back in the wild card, but there's just so much baseball yet to be played. Just when you're ready to give up on your favorite team, they're likely to put a little streak together. And as you mentioned, the Cardinals, three games over 500, and really they're 6-4, I think, in their last 10. They went through that Miami series. They ended up splitting that, but they're not hitting. Last night they put some hits back-to-back in the seventh inning, but their offense can drive you crazy.
Yeah, and you're not clear on, I guess Walker's back in the rotation, and he pitched pretty well last night after getting out of that first inning.
Yeah, he did. I thought the Angels were set to score three or four runs in that first inning, and I thought actually that Pujols hit a home run when he hit that first pitch, but he flew out to deep center field. But the Cardinals go on to win that by a score of 5-1. Some other news. Mike Small playing on the PGA Champions Tour shot a first round, one under par. He's tied for 37th. This is an event up in Madison, Wisconsin, the American Family Insurance Championship. Steve Stricker, kind of the host there, and Stricker is tied for third after a minus five round yesterday. One of his best friends, Jerry Kelly, another Wisconsin guy, has the lead at minus seven. So it's good to see Smalley playing.
Yeah, well, he doesn't have a lot of time to practice, and he just seems to come back every year and play pretty well when he does get a play.
And the round two of that three-round event will be getting underway, weather permitting, up in the Madison area. Illinois baseball had 7 players sign pro contracts, and an 8th, who was a junior college player that was coming to Illinois, decided to go pro. Dan Hartlib will be one of our guests at 9:45. We'll talk more about that. As I mentioned, Will Leach will join us at 10. At 10:30, Mark Schanowski from Comcast Sportsnet in Chicago will be with us to talk about the Cubs, the White Sox, the Bulls draft, the NBA draft. That was Thursday night. And 6 players from the Big Ten were taken in the first 2 rounds. They drafted 60 players overall, just 2 players in the first round. Romeo Langford went to Boston, and Jordan Poole from Michigan went to Golden State. And then all the trades started and everything else. You had a hard time keeping track of who was going where. Nobody had the right hat on.
No, and it won't be really absolutely settled till July, and then we'll know exactly where everybody's going, although I think we pretty well know now.
Our first guest coming up after our first break about 9:15 is a gentleman named Brandon Brown. He is with thewolverine.com. That's a rivals organization up in Ann Arbor. He's going to tell us more about Illinois quarterback Brandon Peters, who, if he's not here already, will be here shortly to get set for the season after he announced earlier this week that he is transferring from Michigan to Illinois to play his final 2 years of college football. So he's certainly one of the favorites in that quarterback battle.
Do you think that this is over now, that the transfers are over? Will there be any more?
For Illinois, you mean? Or?
Well, I don't know. Illinois or anybody. I mean, it's getting pretty late. But there will be some guys graduating in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Would that release some people at the last minute? I mean, what's the difference whether you come in June or the 1st of August? I mean, there could be some. I don't think it's necessarily over.
Practice starts, at least for Illinois and most everybody else, right at the 1st of August. The players mm-hmm. report August 1st. Practice starts the 2nd. They'll have the media day festivities the next week, and then they'll be going for fall practice. So it'll be here before you know it. I know you're a football guy. You anxious for that?
Well, I'm anxious. I think there'll be a lot of interest in watching how Williams, the young guy from St. Louis, the freshman, will be at quarterback, and also Peters, of course, and then we're overlooking Robinson, who has basically come out of spring training as a number one quarterback.
You and I both attended the Josh Whitman media roundtable earlier this week. There's been a lot of talk, and you've heard a lot of comments from Josh since then, but a lot of topics discussed that day.
Unbelievable number of things that he is so deeply engaged in. I almost wrote, I might even do it yet, I wrote a column about his involvement in so many different things that it's hard to imagine that you would have a job where you're dealing at the national level with national concerns, then you've got Big Ten concerns, then you've got Illinois concerns, then you're raising money, and then you're trying to figure out what to do about gambling, and you're finding what to do about beer and beer and baseball, beer and football, beer. I mean, it's just one thing after another that he's and so many different sports that he is. Where he has enhanced the facilities and is in the process. Now we're going to have an $80 million facility open here in July. That's next month in football. This is going to be unbelievable. And what it means to all the other sports, because they're taking over a tremendous weight training area that the football team previously had to itself. Now all the other sports will be in there. It's just what he's doing, and he's revolutionizing the campus there. I mean, as far as sports is concerned, a lot of different. Now, they're not winning in football games. They're not winning enough basketball games, and that's what most fans see. But all the things that he's doing are just unbelievable.
Not the
and
least.
Then you got hockey,
exactly.
Which I haven't even brought up yet, and the complications there. He seems to be very close, but not quite there yet.
Yeah, he said he was real close to making the announcement that it was a go, and then something in the 11th hour, as he put it, kind of put that on hold and wasn't quite ready to pull the trigger yet. Might have been that he was trying to get your check to clear on the
that's right, my $25 million check for the parking
arena,
garage.
The parking garage and to get the arena financed and everything, but it sure does sound promising.
And by the way, did you see where the annual income for TV is now going to be $56 million. Michigan announced that, and Illinois gets the same as Michigan. So that number must be accurate. When we have a hard time getting the number, they never announce it from the Big Ten office. It's always picked up somewhere else. But Michigan has confirmed that they're going to receive $56 million. That's up from, we just hit 50. You know, I mean, it just seems like it. And when you look back go back 20 years, and it was just a fraction of that.
Well, didn't you get a 40 or 50 or 60% raise every year during your time with the News Gazette?
Yeah, I sure did.
So you can relate to that. But yeah, the numbers are just unbelievable.
Staggering. And when you start, you know, I don't know how you raise money for a department when you know the department, if you give $1,000, it's such a small percentage of what they're, you know, of what they're taking in. I mean, it's almost like pennies. It's monopoly money. It's what it is. And I don't know how much of that can be converted into hockey. However, I do know that when they uncovered the fact that they don't have to have a corresponding women's sport, when that came out, that saved them millions of dollars.
That was news to me.
News to me too. I didn't have any idea. Evidently they did a study and determined that because their 55% of enrollment is male, that you only have to have 45% women represented in sports, and so that's why that was uncovered, and now they can go forward without having to worry about that extra expense.
Yeah, because we thought they would either have to add a sport or drop a sport.
Well, now that's what he was talking about, wasn't it? He was talking about dropping a men's sport, and you just wonder about gymnastics, because gymnastics, I'm told, is down this coming year with another school dropped out, is down to 14 teams nationally. 14 teams. Boy, if you're Justin Spring, you got to be worried about that. But, you know, the one thing about it is it's strong in the Big Ten, but outside the Big Ten, there isn't much gymnastics.
Well, in Oklahoma,
yeah,
Stanford,
yeah,
people like that,
well,
Ohio State's good.
The teams that have it are really good.
Yeah.
all the good gymnasts go to a very small number of teams.
356-9397 is our phone number if you'd like to jump in. You mentioned the new football building. It will be opened, as Lauren mentioned, in July for the guys to use. It'll be officially dedicated October the 11th, along with the Dick Butkus statue that'll be on the east side of the stadium.
Yeah.
And that'll, coincidentally, is the Michigan weekend when the Wolverines are in town to play football. And another side story to that, perhaps, would be who's playing quarterback for Illinois against Michigan.
Yeah, I bet it'll be Peters.
We'll talk more about that Brandon Peters coming up with Brandon Brown from the Wolverine in Ann Arbor. Speaking of Michigan, how about that baseball team's run through the College World Series?
Yeah, and they just broke out last night against Texas Tech. 15 runs. They were bombing them right from the beginning. I think they scored in every inning but one. I'm not sure about that, but I think they did. And this is a great time to get hot, isn't it? They got hot in the ninth inning against Illinois.
Yep.
They had already lost a game in the Big Ten tournament. There they are trailing and got that big hit off the wall.
And even though they had a pretty decent overall record, they were pretty convinced they would not have made the NCAA tournament had they lost two games in the Big Ten tournament, or two straight games. Vanderbilt comes from behind to beat Louisville last night. An outstanding performance by Champaign native Luke Smith for Louisville. He threw well over 100 pitches, almost 130 pitches, I think, in that ball game. But Vanderbilt scored two in the ninth to win it, so they stay undefeated. So starting Monday, it'll be Michigan and Vandy in the best two out of three for the national championship.
Yeah, Smith was just two out. He got the first out in the ninth inning and looked like, and I think the coach felt like he could leave him in because he's really pitching well, but they got the key hits to win it.
We are off and rolling on Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk. We'll take our first time out and be back with more. Stay with us. And welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk, everybody. Lauren Tate, Steve Kelly with you. Until 11 o'clock, phone line is open, 356-9397. Dan Hartlett will join us in about 30 minutes or so to talk some Illinois baseball, College World Series, some other baseball items. Will Leach is scheduled at 10 o'clock this morning, Mark Schanowski at 10:30. Plenty of time for an open line, 356-9397, if you'd like to join us. If anybody out there listening happened to be in St. Louis last night at the Cardinal-Angels game and you want to call in and tell us what you thought of that sold-out experience with Albert Pujols in town, we'd love to hear from you as well. I told Lauren yesterday, earlier in the day, that I was kind of curious about how all that would go and being a Cardinal fan. But I was almost to the point that if that wasn't going on last night, I was not sure I was going to watch the game.
Well,
I was so frustrated from the night before.
Well, yeah, getting picked off second base with a tying run, that didn't make – don't turn your head, Steve, when you're on second base.
Especially,
don't look somewhere else because they only got, the only thing to watch is the ball.
Yeah, especially if you're a pitcher and not really a finely tuned base runner.
Well, that's two unfortunate base running attempts by Flaherty, and the other time he stumbled going around third base and was out of home. He'd have been out at home anyway, though. That was a hopeless case. I mean, he was beat so by the throw so badly.
I get the fact that he's a good athlete and you know that and he's got some pretty good speed.
Yeah.
But I mean, those are tough spots to put him in.
Yeah, you almost have to take out Molina though because of the speed factor.
Yes.
I mean, it's just one of those things that happened that, you know, I remember when Wong got picked off of first base years ago, and I never forgot it. I thought, what were you watching? What were you doing? You're just standing there, and the next thing you know, he's out.
That was in the World Series.
Was it? You remember that, huh?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
That was against Boston in the World Series. It might have ended the game. I forget. I think it did. But, yeah, that's a tough way to have things come to an end. Fowler's been picked off a time or two this year, too, as well.
Yeah, and overran a base one time when he just went in standing up. Oh, well.
A lot going on, although, you know, this time of year it slows down a little bit, but with football kind of lingering out there, basketball summer workouts are continuing and things are moving
along. You know, I want to tell you something. July is just around the corner, and Illinois has 10 practices in July to get ready for that August trip to Italy.
Yep.
That means that there's going to be a lot of basketball stuff coming at us pretty fast here. By the 4th of July, we're going to be real involved with basketball, Illinois basketball.
Yep.
And Kofi Coburn and the rest of the guys that are coming in.
Football comes first, of course, and this is Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk with Lauren Tate and Steve Kelly. Going to talk some Illinois football with a guy from Michigan. That makes sense because Brandon Peters, the Michigan quarterback, is transferring to Illinois. 2 years of eligibility left. And Brandon Brown from the Wolverine Rivals organization up there. Brandon, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me.
No problem. We wanted to get your take on the news on Brandon Peters and what you can tell our listeners a little bit about him as a quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, you know, my primary focus at thewolverine.com is to cover recruiting. So I saw Brandon Peters play multiple times in high school, and I loved him. I mean, I thought he was, you know, he was kind of Jim Harbaugh's first big get at quarterback, and I thought he was going to be really good. I really did. I mean, he had all the tools, you know, the prototypical size, 6'4", 220, 230, a plus athlete. Not really a dual threat guy, but athletic enough, a big-time basketball player, can do things with his legs, you know, move the chains if he needs to, can make all the throws, was really, really calm and cool when I met him and talked to him, almost to a fault. We saw that play out a little bit later on, but you just got the sense that you couldn't rattle this kid, and I really thought he was going to be very, very good for Michigan, and we thought that even when he got a chance to play a little bit a couple years ago, and then, you know, things just kind of went downhill from there. He took some big hits and got knocked out of some games and just never really seemed to regain his confidence, and then, you know, got passed up by some other guys on the depth chart. So it didn't play out how I thought it would when I saw him as a recruit, but I still think he's a really, really talented kid.
Do you still think that he's a Big Ten caliber quarterback?
I do. I mean, I don't think that just goes away. I think, you know, a change of scenery, a new system, some new guys around him could be very good for him. Like I said, I think he has all the physical tools. The size is certainly there. But, you know, he just didn't quite click with Jim Harbaugh, maybe. They have very different personalities. You know, Harbaugh's a real fiery, feisty guy, and Peters is just not that. Jim Harbaugh would say often when Peters was still in the running for playing time that he had to really force Peters to be more vocal and take control of the huddle and things like that. And that, again, kind of goes back to his personality. He's just a really laid-back, kind of chill kid. But I still think he's talented enough to play. I do. I mean, he got passed over by some other pretty good quarterbacks at Michigan, but I still think he's got some ability.
Well, Brandon, I think this is Lauren. The concern that we have here, I suppose, is the fact that Rob Smith brought in a running offense, a running quarterback for his offense, and that was Bush last year. And they have, of course, the young man coming in from St. Louis, Williams, who's certainly a runner. How do you think that they would adjust the offense to suit Peters? Can he run an option?
I think he can, but I really don't think that's his strength. I mean, like I said, he's a plus athlete, but he's not elite running the ball. I mean, I've seen Isaiah Williams in person a couple of times as well, covering recruiting at various camps. I mean, that kid's dynamic. I mean, that kid's electric. He's probably legit in the 4.4 range, and that's not Peters at all. So I wonder that. You know, I wrote a little article for another publication there in Illinois last week, and that was, I mean, I'm calling it like I see it. If that's the premise of Illinois' offense, to have a dynamic running quarterback to be a true threat, you know, running the read option and things like that, then I don't see that with Peters. So how they choose to move forward and adapt the offense to him will be interesting to see. I mean, you do have he's got some starts in the Big Ten. He's been in college for several years now. He's a big kid. Durability is not going to be an issue, I don't think, but that's not his game. And, you know, to reshape an offense like that can be a tough thing to do. So I'm really curious to see how it plays out, because I do think he has some talent, but to expect him to carry the ball 15 or 20 times a game, I don't see that for him.
Okay, let's talk about Michigan, because they'll be coming in here in October for a big game. What kind of a team do you see Harbaugh putting together this year?
Well, there's a lot of excitement, a lot of curiosity around the program this year, obviously with the hiring of Josh Gattis, the new offensive coordinator, being handed the keys completely. We were all a little skeptical of that when he first was hired and named the offensive coordinator. You kind of think, okay, well, he's the offensive coordinator, that's great, but it's still going to be Jim Harbaugh calling the plays and having his hands all over. But from everything we've heard this spring, everything Jim Harbaugh has said, everything Josh Gattis has said, that's not going to be the case. It's going to be Josh Gattis' offense. He's been using this speed and space hashtag, you know, all over Twitter, the way he plans to do things, more zone read, more read option, more RPOs, and things like that. And that plays right into what Shea Patterson is good at. He's been doing that since he was in high school. He did that at Ole Miss for a year or two, and then he did a little bit more of it at Michigan last year because he is good at it. Dylan McCaffrey, the other quarterback that's fighting for time, is also going to play, according to Jim Harbaugh. And he's a bigger guy but has some good speed, can really run. Both of them have good arms. So we're all pretty anxious and excited to see what it's going to look like. Obviously, Michigan has recruited very well. They have, you know, three of the best receivers in the Big Ten, maybe in the country, in Donovan Peoples-Jones, Nico Collins, and Tariq Black. And you sprinkle in some of these new freshmen and young guys, Ronnie Bell, Mike Sainristil, still, that have really made an impact. The big question mark is going to be running back, I think, right now, because Chris Evans is no longer on the team. Zach Charbonnet is a true freshman, and Christian Turner didn't play a lot last year. Some continuity on the offensive line. Don Brown's defense still should be really stout. So it's a good team. It's gonna be a good team. There's high expectations across the board in Ann Arbor and nationally, I think, heading into the fall.
We're talking to Brandon Brown. He's from the Wolverine in Ann Arbor. The big news in those parts in the last couple of months was John Beilein's decision to leave Michigan as head basketball coach, go to the NBA's Cleveland Cavaliers, and then with the hiring of Juwan Howard. Your take on both those events and how that's going over up there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Beilein leaving obviously was a big blow to the program that he built. Fantastic coach, couple trips to the national title game in the last 7 years. That's hard to replicate. Everybody was pretty bummed out. But we had been seeing signs. I don't want to say we knew that he was leaving. I don't think anybody really knew it was going to go that way. But there were some signs that he was getting a little burnt out with how things are in college basketball. Guys leaving early, the way people recruit and how that goes, you know, trying to get the top players and not having a ton of success. But he was able to still put very quality teams on the floor. Obviously lots of success in the Big Ten and on the national landscape. So, you know, he was traveling to, he had just, you know, Beilein had just had heart surgery over the past year and a half, and traveling across the world, literally, to do some recruiting, and then, you know, it might not pan out. And it was just, it's taxing. And so he flirted with the NBA a little bit last year with the Pistons and the Magic. And then this opportunity came up in Cleveland, even, you know, not the best situation necessarily in terms of the roster and the talent there, but to kind of ride off into the sunset at the highest level and see how he can do, not have to travel all over the place for recruiting and things like that. Hiring Juwan Howard, tons of fan support, obviously, as a former Fab Fiver, but I mean, I feel like I'm in the minority sometimes. I got lambasted pretty good for expressing my opinions on our message board at the Wolverine, but no head coaching experience, and you're giving a top 10, top 15 program over to a guy who's never been a head coach. I think hiring Phil Martelli was a big, big plus, guy who's been a college basketball. But anytime you're trying to replace John Beilein, that's going to be tough. I think anybody would have been maybe viewed as a step backwards, aside from a very select few. And with the roster makeup, even John Beilein himself might have taken a small step back from what he's been doing in the recent years. So,
well, nobody knows how to rank Michigan, do they? I mean, it just seems like I see some people still ranking Michigan high because they've been good. So, now, you know, Virginia's been good. They lose people, they're still good. Villanova has been good. They lose people, they're still good. I mean, you look around the teams that are – can Michigan do that? And I have a feeling that they'll take a pretty good fall this year. What do you think?
I think so, too. I mean, I don't think there's any way to – you know, maybe head in cautiously optimistic. There's still some good leadership on the team with a senior point guard in Xavier Simpson, a senior big man in John Teske. Isaiah Livers has played a lot of basketball, and they've got some young talent, but losing guys like Iggy Brazdeikis after 1 year, Jordan Poole after 2 years, Charles Matthews opted to go test the NBA waters, unfortunately got hurt. But losing three guys from your starting lineup like that is tough, and then you bring in a new coach who hasn't done it before, and they're still trying to fill out the roster a little bit for the upcoming season. So, yeah, there's definitely some question marks, way more than there usually is heading into the next basketball season under John Beilein. So I don't know how you can't expect them to slide a little bit. Yeah.
Let's talk baseball for a minute as it pertains to Michigan. They got hot at the right time. We've always talked about the Major League Baseball playoffs. Really, all you got to do is get in, and who knows what might happen. And it looked like Michigan was not even going to get in there in the Big Ten tournament, and now they're playing for the national championship starting Monday night against Vanderbilt. How do you explain that?
I don't think you can. I don't think anybody can. I mean, you keep seeing the graphics they keep throwing up there as Michigan was one of the last four in. And, yeah, and now they're going to be playing for a title. It's pretty crazy. You know, not a lot of national success for Michigan or the Big Ten period in a long time. So it's been really exciting. I mean, you know, we all know covering Michigan that football pays the bills and basketball's been really, really good. But it's awesome to see Eric Bakich and the baseball team have this success. It's been really exciting and fun to watch. They play a fun brand of baseball, you know, aggressive. They steal a lot of bases. They swing a lot. They have great pitching. So there's strikeouts and exciting stuff from the mound. So it's been really cool to see. My coworker Chris Ballas is actually headed out to Omaha tomorrow to cover that. So, yeah, it's been a shot of excitement during these dog days of the summer that we haven't had recently. So it's been really, really cool to see Eric Bakich have the kind of year that he's had, and especially this run when, yeah, like everybody said, they almost didn't even get in, and now they're going to be playing for all the marbles here in a couple of days. So it's been really, really neat to watch, and it is fun to watch these guys have the success that they've had.
Well, Brandon, we'll let you plug your website if you'd like for folks to follow. There might be some Michigan fans in Central Illinois that want to follow what's going on with you. Go ahead and do that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's thewolverine.com. And then my Twitter is BSB_Wolverine. Constant recruiting updates. Like I said, some baseball coverage coming up. My coworkers do a phenomenal job of covering the football team and the basketball program. And then I primarily focus on the recruiting side of things. So a little bit of everything over there. We got lots of content every day.
Well, sounds good. And we'll make a point to talk to you or one of your staff members coming up when we get towards football season.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
You bet. That's Brandon Brown from thewolverine.com talking about several Michigan-related things. The lead part of that, of course, was the transfer to Illinois of Brandon Peters, the quarterback. It is 9:33. Let's go to the phones. Steve in Princeton's been hanging on. Hey, Steve, what's on your mind this morning?
Well, you're going to have Dan Hartley on in a little bit. And I was watching the Michigan-Florida State game the other night, and they showed four players that are in the starting lineup for the Michigan baseball team that come out of the Chicago White Sox Interurban Youth Development of Baseball, high school baseball, and how the Michigan coach was tapping into this program that the White Sox offer to high school kids. And I just wondered if Dan's trying to be a part of the White Sox that's in your backyard or, you know, high school kids. Why is Michigan tapping into it, but yet Illinois is not tapping into it? Here, Michigan's playing for the World Series championship, and I was just wondering what his view was on that White Sox program.
Well, you know, this is the kind of call we get a lot of times. Is you see, well, there's Illinois basketball players for Nebraska. How come Illinois didn't get them? You know, there's a guy named there's a guy playing for Wichita State, Van Fleet. How come Illinois? Look. You got to go back to the beginning. I mean, who knows? First of all, who could have imagined Michigan would even be in any kind of a spotlight? They're one pitch away from being out of the tournament, and I mean, that's at the Big Ten level. I mean, these things are fluky. I think it's a good question to ask Dan, but Dan's not short of talent. Their talent's comparable to Michigan. It was all season long. Now, it isn't this week, it isn't this, but this is the way baseball goes. It's a streaky game. And, you know, we've given a lot of credit to Acton for being the closer of the year in the nation, but he didn't get the one final out against Michigan and a week later didn't get the final out that we need. He's one batter away twice from putting Illinois maybe in this kind of position, but it didn't happen. I don't know how you judge something like that, but I don't criticize. You know, we could also ask, why doesn't Dan get more players from Parkland? You know, and Parkland's got a couple guys in the major leagues now. I mean, you can do that story, you can do that all you want, but I don't see any point in it. I mean, we'll ask him, but he's recruiting all over the place. And the other thing is that Louisville is getting players out of the state of Illinois, too. Well, why wouldn't it? Snyder was our main recruiter, and he went to Louisville.
Right.
Makes sense to me.
Good good point, though. We'll ask Dan about that. Anything else on your mind, Steve?
Well, one thing. I wish there were more Garrett Actons, a kid that passes up the money to get a degree in business. We need thousands of athletes like him with his wisdom.
All right. We appreciate the call. Thanks. Go back to the phones here before our next break and go to Alan in Montrose. Hey, Alan.
Morning, guys. Since Brandon Peters is a drop-back passer mostly, and so is Matt Robinson, has Coach Rod Smith ever been a coordinator for a drop-back offense like that?
Yes, he has. He told me that. That was months ago when we discussed it. And he did point out that he had coached players under Rich Rodriguez who were not pure runners. He prefers runners. Now, at Illinois, in some cases, you have to take what you can get. And so I think what you're going to have is a competition between those two guys. I think you're going to have a running package, and I think you're going to have a drop back package. That's what I see.
I don't see anything wrong with that.
I don't either, except that Steve, tell me a time when that's ever worked.
Well, I think it can work, you know, maybe not on a full-time basis. I think it can work situationally in games.
Until one of them kind of takes charge. I mean,
right.
until you see which one is the most effective. But I don't think you can go game after game. Because, look, if you bring in – we saw this previously. When you bring in a guy who's known as a runner, the defense adjusts to that.
Sure.
And when you bring in a guy that's known as a passer, the defense knows that. They've scouted it. They're going to adjust to that too. I think the great hope for Illinois is that Williams can come in and be the kind of player, and this is asking him to do it way too quick, but he is really good. I mean, he's got a really strong arm. There's nothing wrong with his arm. The problem that he'll have will be picking out receivers and learning the offense. We all know that.
That's the key. You know Williams can run. You don't know if he can pass at this level. With Peters, you know he can pass, but he can't run. You need some kind of combination between the two. But the questions just need to be answered. And we'll get start getting those answers before too long.
Well, there's teams all over the country that do it both ways.
Sure.
You know, I mean, you see some teams here, and you see teams that are very good with the running game, and then you see teams that don't do that.
Plus, not to put the whammy on things, somebody's going to get hurt.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, or miss time, or go down with a knee and have to be out for a half a game or whatever. What else you got, Alan?
Well, that's pretty much it. I just think the two different – I'm kind of leaning with Lauren on this. The two different styles like that doesn't seem to ever work for Illinois. You usually got to go one way or the other to be successful.
They'll have the opportunity to find out which way to go.
I guess we will.
We've got three early games that Illinois should be able to win. Should be. I mean, Connecticut had –
by the way.
Yeah.
What are the three early games? Akron, Western, and who's the third one?
Eastern Michigan.
Yep, Eastern Michigan.
Okay, one of them's on the road, right?
Well, Connecticut is on the road.
Yeah, and they had worse statistics last year than Illinois defensively, so they're not very good. there are only three teams in the country worse, or two teams worse than Illinois defensively, and Connecticut was one of them.
It's Akron, at Connecticut, and Eastern Michigan. In that order,
okay.
And then
Western.
Yeah, but then you open up the Big Ten against Nebraska in Champaign.
Have we got a time on that Akron game yet?
Let me look here. We got some. Yeah, we do. 11 a.m.
Ah, crap! I got triple-header baseball to do that day.
Both the
I was hoping it'd be a night game.
Both the non-conference games at home are 11 o'clock. The game at Connecticut is 2:30.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
We bet 9:40 is the time. Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk. We'll take a time out. We'll be back to talk things over with Illini baseball coach Dan Hartlib after this. Stay with us.
Monday night, the semifinals in the first Federal Pella Window Store Little League matchup, 6 and 8 o'clock. Join us here on News Talk 1400 and WDWS.com.
And welcome back to Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk. Steve Kelly, Lauren Tate with you until 11 o'clock. 356-9397 is the phone number if you'd like to join us. Let's say good morning to Illini baseball coach Dan Hartlib, who joined us. How you doing, Dan?
Great. How are you this morning?
We're doing well. Got several things I want to kind of touch base with you on baseball-related topics. Seven of your guys with Illini connections have signed with Major League Baseball organizations. Always a busy time for you and your program. Talk a little bit about how that went and what your role is in that with various guys. Is it kind of different in each individual case?
Yeah, everybody's a little bit different, you know, as far as advice and what, you know, what kind of information they'd like to get from you. You know, we kind of stay in the background, though, a little bit. Those guys have to make decisions that they think are best for them at that time in their career. The way Major League Baseball and the draft works, you know, your junior year is when you have some bargaining power and can make a little bit of money as far as a signing bonus. And then if you look at guys that wait till their senior year, they generally make between $3,000 and $5,000 because they don't have any bargaining power. So you do see a lot of juniors that will jump into baseball if they get that opportunity, just from the financial standpoint. So, you know, it's just, my opinion of it is, I think we would be better served if they would just slot the draft, whatever slot you earn, that's the money you would get, regardless if you're a senior or junior, because I think you would see more players staying to get their education. But, you know, they're not going to ask my opinion on that. The Players Union isn't going to probably give that, you know, that financial situation a chance to work.
Has there been any discussion on that particular topic?
Over the years, they've talked about a number of different things. They've talked about changing the way the draft works a number of times. You look back probably about 3 or 4 years, they did change the draft. So what happens now, in the top 10 rounds, each club has a budget. And you'll see a lot of teams, they'll draft people within, you know, the top six picks, use more money than they have for those slots because somebody's going to be hard to sign. They'll take the last four picks, so their 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th picks, they'll draft a senior that they don't have to give much money to, try to save some money. Once you get out of the top 10 rounds, the max that you can give someone is $125,000 unless you have money left from the top 10 rounds, and then you can supplement that $125,000. That is a kind of a newer thing when you look at how the draft works and the money that they're allowed to pay. So they're trying some different things. I'm not a fan of it, but that's what they think's best right now, as far as, you know, trying to get the young players into the game.
Well, Dan, this is Lauren. With seven guys leaving, and I believe you lost a junior college transfer who might have been a transfer had he not signed. That would, I would assume, leave you with a lot of scholarship money. And how do you plan to distribute? Do you plan to go heavy with the freshman class? Do you use some of that money for players that you have returning?
It's a combination. We do have 11 freshmen that will be coming in. We do have another junior college player that signed. We have a couple more junior college players and even grad transfers that we're working with right now to see, you know, if we can get them on board. And that's going to dictate then what we have for some returning players, to maybe give them a little bit more for a year. It's a busy time. We're out seeing a number of players across the country. And, you know, the thing that we deal with is, I mean, there's some really good players that are out there right now. But when you start looking at transcripts and what will transfer into Illinois, that really limits us on the amount of players that we can actually look at.
You mean the lack of sufficient grades to get in? Is that what you're referring to?
It's not necessarily the grades. I mean, there's some really good students out there, but you have to have a certain percentage of degree hours to be eligible. So each year you have to hit certain benchmarks. And if someone has taken certain courses at, you know, a given school, doesn't mean that those courses will transfer in to the major. The requirements could be different at our school than they are somewhere else. And, you know, our school is so strong academically that it's often very difficult to get, you know, certain players in. And a great example would be a transcript we had evaluated from a junior college player that has a very good GPA and had 27 hours their first year. Well, when we started looking to try to see if we could get them into school, only 14 hours would transfer in, and so we can't get him in school. But again, he's a good student. So, you know, it's a little bit of a moving target. Just have to continue to get those transcripts evaluated and see who is a fit, both from a baseball standpoint and an academic standpoint.
Talking baseball with Illini baseball coach Dan Hartlib. How closely have you been watching the College World Series?
Well, I know exactly what's going on because my son, Zach, watches every single game, every pitch. I do not. I wouldn't say frustrated, but, you know, I get worked up a little bit because, you know, I just don't think we finished the year the way that we were capable of finishing, and that's frustrating to me. You know, I'm happy for Michigan. That's really good for the Big Ten. That's going to help us, I think, in the future, continue to get more and more teams into the tournament. You saw Indiana get to the College World Series a number of years ago, and that helped us as far as the respect our conference got. And we've been more consistent getting more teams in the NCAA tournament. So this run by Michigan is really good for the conference.
What kind of a team you expect to have next year, Dan? I mean, with the players that you talk about filling some of those infield and outfield positions, and also you lose two of your top three pitchers.
Yeah, it's kind of a moving target right now. I'll know a lot more once we figure out this grad transfer and some of the junior college players that we're working with right now. I really, really like our young players. I mean, we had, you know, four freshmen that played on a regular basis last year. A couple other players in that freshman class, especially pitchers, I think are going to be able to, you know, make big jumps and be very good for us. The incoming class, I think, is very talented. You never know how they handle things from a mental standpoint. So that's something that we need to figure out. I expect to win every year. But, you know, we'll see. This is going to be a year that we're going to have to do a good job developing in the fall and over the winter. And I do think we'll be talented, but we'll just see what kind of mentality, you know, that we can create. I feel really, really good that in 2 years we've got a chance to be a really strong team. You know, how quickly we get there this year depends on how quickly some guys mature.
Talk a little bit about Garrett Acton's decision to not try to pursue pro ball at this time and come back for his senior year and to get his degree.
You know, Garrett's really intelligent. I mean, he's a good player. And the thing that I always look at is guys that are confident enough to say, I'm going back to school, I'm going to finish my degree so I can put that behind me. If I get an opportunity to play professionally again the following year, then that's a bonus. You know, guys will say, well, I may never get an opportunity to sign if I don't sign in a given year. Well, to me, somebody that says that is not looking at the fact that they wouldn't be good enough to be a big leaguer anyway. So, you know, Garrett, I think Garrett understands whatever the signing bonus would be. Let's say it's $125,000, you know, the max that I talked about that they could get without the supplemental, you know, money coming from top 10 rounds. But I think he's looked at it intelligently and understands that his degree and getting that finished and being able to move forward in the work world is worth a lot more than that $125,000 that you would get, especially after taxes. So I feel strongly that Garrett made a great decision. You know, I also feel strongly that he'll get an opportunity to go out next year and be able to play professionally. He'll have that degree behind him and have great earning potential from there on out.
We had a call earlier about a White Sox developmental program for high school kids, mentioning that a few players on the Michigan team came out of that. Are you aware of that program, and do a lot of the major league teams have similar kind of programs that college coaches can be aware of and work with potentially?
Yes, we're aware of the program. The White Sox have done a great job being involved in the community, and part of that community initiative is to give some players, you know, in the city an opportunity to progress from a baseball standpoint. You know, they've done a really good job of getting some kids out of there. They've got some minority scholarships that they're able to use from a recruiting standpoint that's really helped them get some kids out of that program. And the program has done a good job of helping some of those kids develop out of the city. So, you know, it is a program we're aware of. It's a program where we've worked to, you know, develop good relationships and hopefully get some of those kids as we move forward.
Hey, Dan, appreciate your time as always. Thanks for talking baseball with us.
No problem. Everybody have a great day, great weekend.
You too. Illini baseball coach Dan Hartlib with us on Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk as we approach the top of the hour. Coming up in the second hour of the show this week, Will Leach will join us from St. Louis. He's a national columnist. He writes for all kinds of organizations these days. U of I graduate. He was in St. Louis the last couple of days for the Albert Pujols return last night.
Wrote a great column about it, by the way.
Before it happened.
Before it happened, yeah.
Yeah, we'll talk about that, and we'll see if it turned out the way he thought it might. He'll be joining us coming up here shortly after 10 o'clock. And then about 10:30, Mark Schanowski, who used to work in this market years ago in television and has been in Chicago the last 20 years or so from Comcast Sportsnet, will join us to talk about Chicago sports, how the Bulls did, and his opinion in the draft earlier this week. We'll talk about the Cubs and the White Sox as well. That's all coming up in hour two of Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk. Stay with us. We're back with that after this.
It's the second hour of Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk. Join the program by calling 217-356-9397 or send a text to the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 217-351-5357. Here again are your hosts, Lauren Tate and Steve Kelly.
10 o'clock, WDWS, Champaign-Urbana. Welcome back to the program. With you another hour. First hour is in the books, and we're going to kick off the second hour. Will Leach, national columnist who writes for all kinds of organizations, including MLB.com, will join us. He's in St. Louis. Something going on in St. Louis, Will?
Well, right now it's just rain. eventually, there was something that happened last night, and I think there will eventually be something happening later today. But yeah, this is definitely one of those weekends when the schedule came out in August that you immediately circled at the time. But as a longtime Cardinal fan, you want to try to beat it.
Albert Pujols back in town. I read your column on Thursday with interest. Before it happened, you said it was awkward and perfect. You thought it might be awkward and perfect. How was it after you actually saw it? Did it live up to it?
I think it was really, couldn't have really asked for it to go any better. One of the points I kind of made in that column was, now it's been 7 years, 8 years since he left. So it's easier to just everyone can applaud without any reservations now. It's almost good fortune that it's taken him this long to come back here. I think if he would have come back in 2012, for example, I don't know if he would have gotten the universally beloved response that he got. But frankly, to cheer for Pujols now, 7 years later, is A, to appreciate, of course, all the things he was doing, did for St. Louis, but also it's kind of to acknowledge that, in the same way that Pujols is not the player that he was when he was in St. Louis, I think a pretty strong argument could be made that the Cardinals are not the team they were when Pujols was in St. Louis. And I think that's a hard thing, I think, for certainly Cardinals management to acknowledge sometimes. So I don't think there's any question that when you look back and watch the highlight videos of Pujols, it's a reminder that, yes, sure, he was in his prime at that time. But the Cardinals, even if they made a good decision by not re-signing him, really haven't been the same.
Well, Will, there is something awkward about these long-term contracts in that you always see the last several years. If a guy's getting $25 million a year, he isn't worth that now. I mean, he helps draw people to the ballpark, but he's just simply and this is true of almost all these long. I mean, this is a 10-year contract, and it's got 2.5 years to go. And frankly, as a Cardinal fan, I'm happy that they don't have to they can spread what money he'd be getting around among other players. And I think the Cardinals are better off not having him now. I'm not saying immediately thereafter, but at this point, this is something that that the Angels have to live with because they don't really know what to do with him.
Yeah, and I think that's another reason this is so kind of sad, right? With it, I know the Cardinals actually, I think, offered him comparable money to what the Angels did, but not for the length of time. I think they were looking 7-8 years, which would have been about now, right? Imagine if Pujols had had the last 7-8 years that he had. Not as great as he was as in St. Louis. But still, certainly the first 3 or 4 years, he was on a 97-win team. He's received MVP votes a few times with the Angels. It's not like he's been a bad player for them. But imagine if he had done all that with the Cardinals and it was wrapping up around them. And think about how universal now they'd be easing him into to maybe a spot. I think that's what's disappointing is that Pujols was kind of a position where, they were offering. He's going to make $60 million over the next 2 years after this year in a deal that the Cardinals were not willing to give him. It's difficult to blame him for not taking that. And I think it's difficult to blame him for the Cardinals for not offering him that. It still is just kind of a bummer, though, right? That it really had to turn out like this and I think he's appreciated in Anaheim, but you saw in St. Louis, he's still absolutely beloved here. No one will ever wear that number 5 again. It was fun to see people busting out all their old Pujols jerseys last night. They hadn't gotten around for a long time. It was exciting to see that he is beloved here, and I feel like eventually he's going to be in the Hall of Fame as a Cardinal. He's going to have his picture on the wall in left field as a Cardinal, and I think this is the first step to where everyone really got to just kind of accept that. But is that going to happen in Anaheim? It's not, and it's a shame that it feels like even though the Cardinals were smart not to give him that contract, it does feel like the last 7-8 years, it still feels strange that he wasn't a Cardinal.
Well, you also mentioned the fact that the best player with the Angels right from the beginning almost was Trout. I mean, from the moment that Pujols got there, Trout was just coming into the league, and has some say that he might be the greatest player of all time. I don't know if that's true or not, but I hear discussions on that. What are your thoughts about him?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I the best way I think for a certain generation to think of Trout is to think of Mickey Mantle if he had never gotten hurt and didn't have some of the off-the-field issues that I think shortened Mickey Mantle's career a little bit. That's who he is. I mean, he plays in a very similar way. He's powerful, he's fast, he plays a terrible defense. And to me, the amazing stat about Trout this year is that he leads the majors in walks, runs in RBI, three very different categories. And that's a place where, you know, you've been people in a Moneyball world, running RBIs don't count as much, and you're supposed to get on base. That's what matters more. He does all of it. He does all of it, and he plays a great center field. And I think that's kind of the thing that another thing that kind of bit Pujols a little bit. His first year in Anaheim was Trout's rookie year. And I think if, you know, Trout had played in 2011, he was always considered a top prospect. But he had played in 2011, and he had really struggled at the end of the season. He played like 30 games and hit, like, imagine Mike Trout hitting and not reaching the Mendoza line in batting average. It's an insane kind of idea. But he really struggled his first year. The Angels didn't know that they had this all-world player. They knew Trout was good. I don't think they quite realized he was this. And he became that the minute the Pujols got there. So Pujols did not – I think when the Angels signed him, they thought they were getting, you know, prime Pujols. And not just that, but the best player in baseball, one of the best players in baseball. And they got there and immediately realized, not only do we not have the best player in baseball, we don't have the best player on our own team. And we're paying him now for 10 more years. So I think that hurt Pujols as well. Not only could he not be the best player, you know, the Angels – immediately saw, like, you know, the Angel fans had, they, one of the reasons that an Angel signed Pujols was to get a star, to get that big star, the big headline name star. And then as soon as he got there, there was a much bigger star that emerged, and he was homegrown. So I think that hurt him as well.
Visiting with Will Leach. So with the Pujols pomp and circumstance out of the way, at least of the initial night, of course, there's two more games in the series, but let's get your take on the Cardinals. Are they as frustrating to you as they are to Lauren and me and other Cardinal fans?
They are so much more frustrating to Cardinal fans than, frankly, than they seem to be to the team and the organization. There's a certain, you know, I have a podcast with Bernie Nicholas, who I think is on the show pretty regularly, called Seeing Red, and we talked about this last week. I do think there's something in the Cardinals organization that is resistant to massive change or to shaking things up. And I feel like that's a little bit different than when Pujols was here, to be honest. One of the things, you look at the Cardinals, and Mike Schilt, I think, has been a very positive influence for the Cardinals. I think he has to make some of the big strategic blunders that his predecessor made. But I still think that one of his faults is whenever the Cardinals aren't playing well, he's like, we're going to get this. He's all happy talk. Bernie always called him the Boy Scout. And he's always, you know, he's always, we're going to be fine. Even when we're losing, don't worry, we're going to get there. And it's hard to imagine Tony La Russa having that relentless optimism. And I think it speaks into the team. I mean, to me, that the issue with the Cardinals right now, they're finally starting to get a little bit of pitching. The back end of the bullpen is starting to actually kind of come together pretty well. And the rotation is, it feels like they need some help in the rotation, but I think that Hudson stabilized. I think that Hudson and Flaherty, I think you're okay with them as your top two. But the offense, I mean, even last night, even in the win last night, they had no hits for the fifth inning. I mean, the offense is just stopped right now. And I think a lot of it is that kind of idea. Look at Matt Carpenter. I love Matt Carpenter. I think Matt Carpenter's gotten a tough ride from Cardinal fans for a long time. I think he's a great player, and he's done so much for the Cardinals. But, I mean, there's a certain stubbornness about Carpenter and about the Cardinals organization. He just grits his teeth and hits it into the chip every single time. And for some reason, he looks surprised every time it happens. It's really kind of an amazing thing. He went 0-for-6 in that tough loss they had in Miami. And he hit the ball hard. But he just hit the ball hard right at people who were positioned because they followed where Matt Carpenter hits the ball. I know some people don't like the shift, but it's here. And if you don't adjust to it, I think the Cardinals, because they've been successful for so long, they're resistant to get away from what works for them. And I think it's starting to catch up with them a little bit now. Baseball's a little bit more innovative. They're still a good team, but I don't think they're quite where some of our higher hopes were heading into the year.
I know hitting a baseball is one of the hardest things to do, but these guys are major leaguers. And when you see the wide shot of the infield with virtually nobody on the left side, and he did have bunt double in that Miami series. And I'm not saying he has to do that every time, but it would seem to me you could come with an inside-out swing and hit it to the left side with some regularity, at least to make them think about coming out of that shift.
It is certainly frustrating. Sorry, go ahead, Bob.
He does hit some balls to the left side, but they're always in the air.
Yeah.
And I've tried to figure that out because I don't know how many times he's flown out to left field here. If that same ball hit on the ground would be a hit through the shortstop area. By the way, he can't bunt every time because with less than two strikes, they play that guy pretty close to third base. And so it's with two strikes that we want him to bunt. And that's if he fouls it, it's a strikeout. So and it's not easy. Evidently, it's not. If it was easier to bunt, more people would do it, I guess. But
yeah, I mean, it's frustrating. It's not just about the bunt double was a fun little headline, fun little clip. But generally speaking, I don't actually think that's what we want Matt Carpenter to be doing. Another issue with Matt Carpenter is he hit, 36-37 home runs last year? He is not nearly on that pace this year. That's an issue with Carpenter, too, is one of the reasons the shift didn't hurt him that bad last year is he kept hitting it over the shift, and now he's not doing that. I think that's the issue. Listen, Carpenter is still getting on base. I don't mean to be this a major criticism of Carpenter. I still think he's got a lot of value on the team. You'd like to see him get going. Frankly, I'd like to see Paul Goldschmidt get going. That's someone I think has really struggled as well. I think it speaks to the general malaise you see with the offense right now. You see, I think Schilt said that. I think John Mozeliak said that most of the Cardinals are trying to hit five run homers every time they're up, and I you see that. You see that with maybe them being a little bit too aggressive on the base pass, sending Flaherty home on plays. They're a team that feels like it should be really good, but isn't quite there, and sometimes that costs them. They get a little bit too. They seem to play tight sometimes in a way that I don't know is helpful. There's still a lot of talent there. But that offense, it's got some holes. And if you look at the back, look at the back 6-7 in the lineup. Listen, I love Yadier Molina. He's not the hitter that he used to be. He still has his moments. But with Molina, Wong, and Bader, 6-7-8 with the pitcher up at ninth, that's half your order. That is really, really struggling. That's tough.
I guess the thing that we ought to pay attention to is the fact that the Brewers and Cubs are letting the Cardinals hang around. I mean, the Brewers are in a slump right now, and the Cubs are not playing as well as Cub fans want them to. I mean, right now, if you look at this thing, I don't know how many teams I'd have to count them up, but everybody that's 500 or better has got a real shot at the wild card.
Yeah, it's kind of exciting on one hand. It also speaks to the Cardinals are really fortunate. And it's a good thing that neither the Cubs nor the Brewers have turned into the Twins. This is kind of the issue for Cleveland, right? Cleveland is a team like the Cardinals that's had success and doesn't have one of their – isn't off to a great start. They're still kind of hovering around 500, a little above 500. And they're like, okay, maybe we can get on a run and really take control of this thing, except Minnesota has taken off. And the Cardinals are very lucky that that hasn't happened with the Cubs or the Brewers. For crying out loud, we've been so frustrated about the Cardinals. They're a half game out of the wild card right now. I mean, really kind of crazy to think how kind of fortunate they've been that regard. Playing with a team that really doesn't feel like it's played very well since April. This is a team that was 10 games over 500 at the end of April. I at one point talked to Bernie on my podcast saying, wow, could this be like the 04 team? No, I was very wrong. It's not like the 04 team at all. But I do think you see what this team could be. So they're lucky to be able to still kind of hang around. But frankly, the Cubs and the Brewers are saying the same thing. The Cubs are saying, wow, it's a good thing. The Cardinals have not taken off and let our kind of mediocrity and struggle really hurt us in that regard. So it feels like it's going to be kind of like last year, right? Last year, one team got hot. The Brewers got really hot. Christian Yelich turned into an insane person over September and won an MVP and won the division for them. They got hot at the right time. You feel like one of those teams is going to do it. And the Cardinals, for all their struggles, are at least still hanging around enough to where it could be there.
Another couple of minutes with Will Leach. What else is keeping your interest these days? I know you're spending the weekend there in St. Louis, but what are some of the things you want to be working on for next week?
Yeah, I'm working on covering the Women's World Cup a lot, actually. I feel like I feel like people forget a little bit. Like 4 years ago, the Women's World Cup was, I wrote this for New York Magazine, was a massive, like the championship game, the Women's World Cup, still is the most highly watched soccer game in US, in American television history. It was watched more than the World Series. It was watched more than the NBA Finals. It was a huge, huge event. The U.S. soccer, women's soccer team got a parade through the Canyon of Heroes after they won the World Cup 4 years ago. Somehow Bill de Blasio got himself on the float. I don't know how he did that. If you see all the pictures, you can see him floating around there. But so I feel like the way this soccer team, what's interesting is, 4 years ago, it was just this happy story. But obviously, it's such a good team. They're so fun. And now, you know, now there's, are they scoring too much? Is U.S. soccer giving them enough support? They're going to be having mediation about getting equal pay with the men's team. Like, there's all these. I find it fascinating to see how in 4 years, the Women's World Cup was such a happy story. And this year, it feels. I feel like maybe it's the progress of women's soccer that now it's becoming controversial. I feel like that's good. Like, that's how you know you're growing to acceptance is people are debating about Stephen A. Smith is debating about you. I feel like that's a good sign when you're moving forward. It's fun to watch. They play on Monday, and it's an exciting thing to watch. And they're just a really fun team, and I wish I encourage people. It's always good to have in these polarizing times to just have a thing where everybody goes to a sports bar and is all wearing American stuff and cheering for America together. And I feel like the Women's World Cup gives us that opportunity.
Interesting stuff. I don't know that we've ever asked you, were you a St. Louis Blues fan? Did you get all wrapped up in the Stanley Cup Finals?
They are my favorite hockey team. That's a vague enough statement to say to imply that I know hockey a little bit better than I do, but certainly it was pretty hard not to get wrapped up in that. You know, this is kind of, to use the Cardinal analogy, it's kind of their 2011 team, right? Except they never won one before. The idea of a team that was looked down and out and completely out of it and came out and did that. And such kind of fun personalities. It's been great to be here in St. Louis. This is the first time I've been in St. Louis since they won the Cup. Yeah, there are blue stuff. I mean, there's always been blue stuff around, but I mean, people, there's still kind of a giddy grin at the average person. And it's really rainy and gross here, so there's a big grin for them to be able to be that happy. There's still just kind of a vague grin that everybody has about that. And it was an amazing thing. It was a glorious thing. And it's also a reminder, too, no one parties after they win a championship like hockey players. I think they're still going out somewhere. Somewhere in this great country of ours, or in I guess the Eastern Bloc, where a lot of players are from, there are St. Louis Blues players still drinking heavily and yelling happy vulgarity. You know, that's happening at some point. So hockey players sure do celebrate like nobody else does.
Hey, Will, we appreciate your time as always, and we look forward to talking to you again next month.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me as always. You take care.
Thanks, Will.
Will Leach with us from St. Louis this morning.
Yeah, and I just checked the weather there, and at 11 o'clock this morning, it's 90% rain, and 60% at noon, and 40% at 1 o'clock. So that game, which is supposed to start early.
1:20.
Yeah, after 1 o'clock. So it's still raining at 2 o'clock, so it doesn't look, you know, who knows. Sometimes it misses you, and sometimes it hits you.
Well, regardless, they've got all afternoon and all night.
Yeah, that's true.
To get it in, and they'll probably get it in. They've got the field covered and everything. So 10:18, phone line is open, 356-9397. Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk. We'll take a timeout and be back with more after this. Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk continues at 10:22. We're with you until 11 o'clock this morning. The phone line is open, 356-9397. Thanks to Will Leach for leading us off here in hour number two. But at the bottom of the hour, we're going to be joined by old friend Mark Schanowski from Comcast SportsNet in Chicago. Talk about the Cubs, White Sox, the Bulls, the Bears, anything else that may come up involving Chicago sports. I thought maybe, Lauren, you'd be in Chicago last night at Soldier Field. The Rolling Stones were in town.
I don't think I've made the Rolling Stones. I've never seen the Rolling Stones in person.
I haven't either all these years. I guess I've had some chances. But in the question, if you ever get asked the question, either or, Rolling Stones or the Beatles, I'm a Beatles guy.
Well, I would be.
But I never saw them either, so.
Well, no, I never saw the Beatles in person, no.
But pretty amazing, Rolling Stones still going at it, Mick Jagger at 75.
You tell me Kent Brown made it?
Kent Brown was there. Saw some pictures on Twitter with he and his wife, Amy, that they were there having a good time. Kent told me earlier this week he remembered going to a Rolling Stones farewell concert.
In 81?
In 1981 in St. Louis. And they're still going strong. A good crowd and apparently a good concert last night at Soldier Field. Illini basketball still going through some summer workouts. They made some more offers. You can't fault Brad Underwood and his staff for getting the offers on the table, can you?
Well,
I don't know what happens when a bunch of guys decide to accept, then that's another issue. But they've got the offers out there. Two more point guards this week.
There's something we don't fully understand about college recruiting. When you can offer 40 or 60 guys and you've only got two or three or four scholarships, there's something going on there that, you know, there's something behind the scenes that we're not aware of, because you don't really want every guy that you're offering. You want the top guys. I mean, they want Stuart and Miller. We know that, right? I mean, but the problem with Stuart and Miller are they're in-state players, and they're very, very, very good, and that's the problem. They're so good that once you get Duke and Kentucky and Kansas and all those schools involved, it's another world. And what we saw the other day in that draft, Illinois hasn't had anybody in the draft for several years, okay? And if you don't, you're not really in competition for anything big. If you don't have pro players, nobody is going to win a national championship without players who at least have a chance to play professionally. And Illinois has not been in that, really hasn't been in that position lately.
Right. So we'll see how things play out with that trip to Italy coming up. They'll get some practice time. We talked about that last week with Brad Underwood. 10 practices spread out over the month of July.
Yeah, I hope we can get in and see some of those. I'd like to see what Coburn looks like and how they're going to work that together, you know, how it's going to work with he and Georgie together, if that's the way it turns out. I don't know if it will. I have my doubts about it. But I think we'll do it both ways. I think we'll probably play them together and play them in place of each other at some times.
A little easier to do that kind of situational play in basketball than it is in football.
Well, that's right. And fouls play a big role in this. And as soon as you get a foul or two in the first half of this guy, one of them is going to be out of the game. And whoever gets the fouls is going to be sitting down probably. And that's the unfortunate part about the game that has never been resolved and nobody seems to be interested in resolving it. I mean, we just go along with this idea that, boy, if you get two fouls in the first half, you must sit down.
One of the other items of many items that Josh Whitman talked about earlier this week in his annual media roundtable was the fact that he gave us an update on Bobby Rountree, that he has been transferred to a rehab facility in Chicago where they can keep a closer eye on him. And it's an outstanding facility there that they expect him to be there 3 to 6 months and with plans on getting Bobby back to Champaign. So there's a shot that Bobby Rountree might be in Champaign during part of the football season.
Yeah, I certainly hope so.
It would be good to see. And he also talked a little bit about Lovie Smith and the role he played after that terrible accident happened and the time that he spent in Florida with the Rountree family.
Well, Illinois got to get around to the business of trying to replace Bobby Rountree, which won't be easy. But what's interesting is they have so many options now at defensive end. They have the players who are returning, which will be, you know, Gay and Carney and those fellows returning. Then you got the transfer from USC, who's going to be a strong competitor at defensive end. Then you got Randolph, and you got Moses. You got two players coming in that are high picks. So it could go any number of ways as to who will actually wind up be playing the defensive end positions for Illinois. It could be the young guys. It could be the old guys. It could be the juniors. I don't know.
There's a lot of questions, though.
Yeah, that'll all be resolved by competition and practice. And the problem being that you get a lot of practice against blocking, but there's not much tackling going on, if any, in spring and in fall practice. They just don't tackle.
Right. I wonder if that's how widespread that is across college football.
It's widespread. It is. I'm not saying everybody.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Alabama's not going to tackle. I'm not saying Michigan's not going to tackle. But teams that don't have depth and are concerned about – and it's just an approach now from the medical staff that, you know, that that's the recommendations.
Well, I don't think every player that plays college football knows how to tackle.
Well, I think that's true.
When they get here. So if you don't tackle.
That's right.
How do you teach them how to tackle? And then all of a sudden it's your first game.
I know it. Well, Lovie doesn't believe in tackling. I mean, he's made that pretty clear to us.
Well, it's still a pretty important part of the game.
I think it is. I'm coaching. But the other thing is, if you get guys injured, then, of course, that's a setback. So I don't know. Well, if you're going to play football, you're going to have injuries. You really need to be good at fundamentals. I don't think any of the top teams are short on fundamentals. They tackle and they block. And we'll talk about everything else in the course of the season. We'll talk about who's going to be the quarterback and what about those receivers dropping balls and this, that, and the other thing. But it really comes down to blocking and tackling.
When you were a kid, if you can remember this far back, did you ever play a game called Kill the Guy with the Ball?
No.
You had some good tacklers there. you didn't want the ball coming to you. It was just a big mob scene. You tossed the ball up, and whoever got it got 12 other guys in the neighborhood piling on. So there was a lot of stuff that wouldn't be legal in the game, obviously, but that was a great game that you that was one instance you didn't necessarily want the ball in your hands.
Yeah, I'm going to take you back to one thing when we were talking about basketball that I think that's new. Two players this year, two high school players, top players, have decided not mm-hmm. to go to college.
Right.
I wonder if that might become a trend. If you think you're good enough to be in the NBA, and of course, once the one and done is gone, that will be gone. But if you think you're good enough to be in, to go to the NBA immediately, and instead of going to class, you want to just play basketball for a year, we're seeing this start to be a trend.
Maybe. Moving up on 10:30, WDWS, Champaign-Urbana. We'll take a timeout, and when we come back, we'll have more on the show for you on Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk. Stay with us. Welcome back to the show, everybody. Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk with Lauren Tate. I'm Steve Kelly. With you until 11. We got started at 9, and we still got time for you to call in if you like. 356-9397 is the phone number. Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk here on WDWS, Champaign-Urbana. Happy to welcome to the program now Mark Schanowski, Comcast Sportsnet in Chicago, former member of the media in Champaign-Urbana a year or two ago. How you doing this morning, Mark?
Great, guys. Doing well. A lot of stuff going on as usual in Chicago. It's been a fun week. We had the basketball and hockey drafts, and baseball's in full swing now.
Let's talk baseball first. Cubs have a game and a half lead over the Brewers. The Cardinals just two games back. What do you think about the National League Central race here in the middle of June?
It's really been kind of surprising for me. I thought maybe one team would get off to a hot start, but right now they're all kind of middling. The Cubs got off out of the gate really slowly at 2-7, and then they had a good stretch where they were over 10 games over 500. And then, you know, the inconsistent hitting came back in, and they've kind of fallen back a little bit. Milwaukee hasn't gotten the starting pitching that they need to be a true powerhouse in the division. And the Cardinals really haven't got out of the gates that well either. So it's three teams, I think, that were expecting maybe a little bit of a better start. But because of it, you know, it looks like we're going to have a race right down to the final weekend. And I know that's something that really gets baseball fans excited.
Does it make it a strong division or a mediocre uh-huh. division, or do we know yet?
I think that's the real question right now. I don't think any of those three teams is strong enough to run away and hide. And I thought early in the year when the Cubs had that really good stretch in late April and throughout the month of May that maybe they would pull away a little bit. But for whatever reason, this team hasn't really progressed the way I think that the front office thought after they won the World Series in 2016. You know, a couple of the young guys, Kyle Schwarber, Addison Russell, looked like they were going to be perennial all-stars, and then they've kind of taken a step backwards. Even Chris Bryant hasn't gone on the curve that a lot of people thought he would after the award in 2016. Some of that's been due to injury, but a lot of it has been, you know, a lot of swing and miss, and I think that's the problem with the whole lineup, is that they have a lot of guys that are all or nothing kind of hitters, and you know, they'll score 12 runs one day and then two the next. So they're trying to get more consistent. I'm sure the Cardinals are feeling the same way, that they've got a better offense than what they've showed to this point. They could obviously use some more consistent starting pitching. And Milwaukee really has been kind of the mystery. You know, they ended up winning the division in the 163rd game last year, and I thought they would, you know, take a natural progression forward. But again, the lack of starting pitching has really hurt them.
I think that swing and a miss thing is universal across baseball, because,
yeah,
I mean, it's getting down to all or nothing, home run or strikeout.
Yeah, I mean, right now it looks like the Major League Baseball home run record for a season is going to be obliterated this year. You hear talk all around the league about the baseball is juiced, and some pitchers are fearing for their lives because of the velocity that ball's coming back at them. It's a different game now. You know, we've heard a lot about talk about launch angle and exit velocity in the last few years, and the way hitting coaches are preparing their guys. You know, they're trying to get them all to hit the ball in the air, which leads to more swing and miss. And I know a lot of they're trying to make the game more exciting for younger fans with more action and tape measure home runs and things like that, but the problem is you don't see a lot of the other things that make baseball interesting, a lot of the strategy, the hit and run, you know, being able to turn double plays. You're seeing a lot of, you know, people standing around and either jogging around the bases or swinging and missing and going back to the dugout. So when you really break down how much action there is in a given baseball game, unfortunately, it is the three true outcomes, you know, which is strikeout or home run.
You know, Mark, watching the Cubs and the Cardinals a lot, what I'm finding is that there are a lot of players that I don't know, I never heard of, that are really good baseball players on a lot of other teams. I find that almost every series that I didn't know those guys were that good, you know. And I think that part of it is we only see our own team, and we don't really appreciate just how many young strong players, and particular pitchers, young strong pitchers are coming into the game.
Yeah, right now, if you can't throw a fastball in the mid-90s, they don't even want to look at you. There's so many good young pitchers that come in with that velocity, and that probably contributes to the home run binge as well, because the ball's coming in that fast. If you make solid contact, it's going to go hard the other way. You're right. The Cubs have seen some good young pitching all throughout baseball, some guys that have really handcuffed them and shut them down. And there's also a lot of good young hitters in the game. So the sport is in a good place in terms of trying to be more marketable for the younger generation, but you know, for those of us who grew up watching the game being played a different way, it is a little bit different. You know, there is an element of video game baseball to it, where, you know, just about any hitter that walks into the box can hit it a mile.
I'm going to take you away from to a different area here. Have you heard about this team in, I think it's the Atlantic League, that they're using an electronic plate to call balls and strikes? Have you heard about that at all?
No, but I mean, that has been a frequent complaint that, you know, people are unhappy with the balls and strikes being called. And I don't think Major League Baseball is anywhere close to considering that, but it is an experiment worth looking at. If you have the technology, why not see how that might work?
Well, it's going on right now. I don't know how it's working out. I'd like to know, because if you want to speed up the game, all you have to do is call the strikes that are strikes. I don't know how many pitches last night, both sides, high pitches are called balls, pitches on the knees are called, and they're within the rectangle, and they're touching the rectangle. That means they're strikes. And I think that the pitchers would be really happy if it was done that way, because I think umpires are calling a lot of balls on high and low pitches that should be called strikes. That's just my opinion, and I think that has a lot to do with the lengthening of the ball game.
So are you advocating for more strikeouts, Lauren?
I'm advocating for balls that are striked to be called strikes, because if they are, you better swing at them.
Right.
And
sounds like you better have some pitching in your background, Lauren.
Well, that may be, but the game last night, I don't know how many times the pitchers, it got to be where they accepted it. I mean, the catchers and pitchers just simply accepted the realization that these weren't going to be called strikes. And I think that if you use the first of all, but in arguments, I mean, it's just like tennis. I mean, you when you check it, it's either in or it's out, and there's no argument. And I think that right now that you've got a lot of unhappy people who because of the human element, that if you took that out of it, I definitely am in favor of going to an electronic plate. I definitely am. I just don't like the idea of all these. It's up to an umpire whether a guy strikes out or not. You know, I mean, it's and they're missing I've read where of the balls that were within an inch of the plate, one way or another, they're missing 40% of them.
Well, that's one of Joe Maddon's most consistent complaints in games that the Cubs lose. You know, obviously he chooses his words carefully so he doesn't get fined, but I know that he's been very unhappy with the inconsistency of umpires, and teams will scout the umpires as much as they will the opposing players, and they know where that particular umpire strike zone is and isn't, and they just take advantage of that repeatedly. And it can get extremely frustrating when pitches that are in the strike zone aren't called strikes, and there's very little you can do about it throughout the course of a game because – you know, the umpires are set in their ways, and obviously I'm sure there's a review process, you know, from their players, their umpires union. But still, those guys really don't change. They've got a certain strike zone, and if it's wrong, it's going to continue to be wrong throughout a game.
Visiting with Mark Schanowski from Chicago. Before we get off baseball, let's go across town. The White Sox, just a game under 500. Surprising to you at this point?
Yeah, I think it's been a very pleasant surprise, especially considering the fact that their starting rotation has been so ineffective throughout the year. Obviously, Lucas Giolito is headed to an appearance in the All-Star game. I believe he's 10-2 right now with a really good earned run average, and his progression from last year has been remarkable. I know that in talking with him last year, he was just totally lost. He was not getting hitters out. He was walking a lot of people. I think he was second in baseball in the percentage of walks last year. And he was just totally frustrated as to what had gone wrong with his mechanics and his ability to throw strikes consistently. He went back in the offseason, basically changed his delivery, and he's become so much more successful. It's really a remarkable story. But the rest of the guys, you know, Carlos Rodon had Tommy John surgery. He won't be back until the middle of next season. Michael Kopech is out all of this year after he had Tommy John last fall. They've had some of their prospects have been hurt. Dane Dunning, a guy they like a lot, he had Tommy John surgery. So it's been kind of a patchwork starting rotation. They've got a couple of guys in there that really don't even belong in the major leagues, but yet they're running them out there every 5 days. So to be within one game of 500 is really a testament to the progress of some of their young hitters. Eloy Jimenez has done a great job. He's gotten hot of late, hit 2 3-run homers against the Yankees and hit a game winner against the Cubs. Tim Anderson is probably headed to the All-Star game as well. He's played some really good shortstop. And, you know, they've got some guys in the minor leagues that they're excited about that are going to be coming up as well. So the arrow's definitely pointing up for the White Sox. If they could just get some pitching, you know, they could be a pretty solid team. But I know that there's probably 20 other teams around baseball are saying the same thing.
Let's talk a little Bulls basketball now. The draft was the other night. The Bulls, with the 7th pick, took Colby White, a guard out of North Carolina. Your thoughts on the draft and where you think the Bulls might be heading into the next season?
Well, John Paxson has been very open about the fact that he wanted to upgrade the point guard position. They're not happy with what they were getting from Chris Dunn the last couple of years. Part of the reason with that is that he's been hurt a lot, hasn't been able to play, you know, consistent stretches of basketball. But they were determined to bring in competition, and they were hoping the draft would fall in a way that one of the two point guards, other than Ja Morant, either Darius Garland or Colby White would fall to them. And they were very happy that the Timberwolves, who picked traded up to get right ahead of them, didn't take a point guard. They went with Jared Culver from Texas Tech. So Colby White came to Chicago, and, you know, he's 19 years old. He's one of the fastest players available in this draft. He's kind of the old one-man fast break. You know, he kind of reminds me a little bit. He's taller, but he reminds me of, you know, D. Brown, who played at Illinois. Just a guy who is a blur from end to end. He can get you an easy basket in transition. And he's also, you know, a decent three-point shooter. Just under 6'5", he has pretty good size. He can play either guard spot. And I think that with him and Zach LaVine, they'll have a very exciting backcourt. May not be the best one defensively, but it'll be fun for the fans to watch those guys run up and down the floor.
Well, Mark, do you see anything in the way of a free agent to enhance this Bulls lineup?
Yeah, you know, Lauren, it's been interesting. They've also been open about the fact that they're really not going for one of the top players. I mean, they're a little bit short in terms of cap space and be able to go after a max free agent, but they could probably create that cap space with a couple of minor trades. But right now, what they're trying to preach patience. This is going to be the third year of the rebuild process after they traded Jimmy Butler, and they've said they'd like to bring in two or maybe even three guys that are more moderately priced that can really strengthen the bench unit that was very weak a year ago. The one name we're hearing consistently up here is they're hoping to bring Taj Gibson back. Taj, though, is 34, and you know, it'd be interesting to see how productive he can be as a player. But they feel like his experience, the fact he was always a really good guy in the locker room, would help some of the young guys mature. And then I think they'll probably cast a pretty wide net to try to find some shooting. They ranked near the bottom of the NBA in three-point attempts, three-point percentage, and as you know, with the game being played the way it is, it's so three-point heavy that if you can't be competitive in that area, you're going to come up short on most nights.
What's attendance been like this past year for the Bulls without a superstar and without a very good record?
It has dropped a little bit, and they have consistently been the leaders in the NBA in attendance, because when the United Center was built, they put 22,000 seats in there, which they don't generally do with some of the newer arenas now. They had been number one in attendance, really for the last decade. But the last couple of years, we've seen more empty seats in the United Center. Now, some of those seats are bought and paid for by season ticket holders, and they just don't come. But, yeah, the sellout streak ended, and there is a little bit, you don't see the automatic sellouts anymore. But the fan support for the team has still been remarkably good through the first 2 years of this rebuild. But they're going to have to turn the corner this year and hopefully get that win total maybe at least into the mid to high 30s.
You enjoy working with Kendall Gill?
Kendall's the best. You guys, I know you see him. He comes back quite often to do some charity work in the Champaign-Urbana area. He's the best. And right now, his son, Phoenix, who's in sixth grade, is a pretty good basketball player. I mean, he's shown a lot of potential. You know, he can be like the old man. I know that Brad Underwood's already seen him play. So maybe we'll get a scholarship offer before he even gets to high school. Who knows?
Fun for you sitting next to a Hall of Famer there, huh?
Absolutely, yeah. And Kendall keeps himself in remarkable shape. I mean, he still works out twice a day. You know, it's funny, sometimes you will get food catered in and he won't touch it. You know, he's always making sure he's eating the right thing. And I'm like, Kendall, you're not playing anymore. But he's always training for something. You know, he's the best. And he brings great ability to analyze the game to our shows on a nightly basis. And he's so popular with the fans. Everybody loves him, and he's a joy to work with. And we have Will Perdue on our set as well, who's very good at analyzing the game and letting know what's going on in the strategy with the big guys. So we really have a perfect marriage of having guys who can analyze every aspect of the game, and we have a lot of fun doing the shows.
Since the Bulls are in the East, tell us who you expect to win the East next year.
I think Milwaukee's the team to watch. I mean, obviously there's so much uncertainty about Kawhi Leonard coming back. I think there's a chance Kawhi Leonard might sign one of those 1-1 contracts with Toronto where he has a player option for the second year and maybe feel like they might have a chance to win another championship next year. But if Kawhi Leonard goes back home to Southern California, signs with the Clippers, then it's going to be completely wide open. And I think Milwaukee probably is kicking themselves for not closing out the Raptors. You know, a lot of people forget that they won the first two games, and then they lost Game 3 in Toronto in double overtime. They could have had a 3-0 lead, which would have pretty much meant the series was over. I expect that Giannis will learn from the faults that he had in that series where they basically forced him to be a jump shooter, and he couldn't make that shot with any consistency. I think he'll come back better. I think they'll probably re-sign all the guys that they have going into free agency. And they'll be ready to make a run. Philadelphia also could be a factor if they're able to re-sign Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris in free agency. And Boston, I think, obviously going to take a step back if they lose both Kyrie Irving and Al Horford as free agents. So right now I think that I'm kind of thinking that Kawhi may head back to Los Angeles and sign with the Clippers. So if he leaves, I would say Milwaukee and Philadelphia would be the class of the East.
Well, this entire league is going to be really up for grabs next year with, obviously, with the Warriors having the problems that they do with the injuries, I think it's anybody's game.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. You know, just a horrible thing to watch to see in two straight games. First, Kevin Durant ruptured the Achilles, and then Klay Thompson suffered an ACL tear. I mean, it's just devastating, and it does throw the league wide open. I think that any team that feels like with a move here or a trade here that they can get into the mix is going to try it. We already saw Utah trade three players and two first-round draft picks to pick up Mike Conley, feeling like with a quality point guard, maybe we can win the West, get to the finals, and steal a championship when the league is kind of reshuffled. I think you're going to see other teams make bold moves like that as well in terms of trying to make a run at it this year while the Warriors, where two of the three Warrior stars are going to be out for most of the year.
Hey, Mark, we appreciate your time. Thanks for talking some sports with us, and we'll do it again soon.
Yeah, always great catching up. All the best to you guys and your listeners. Always have fond memories of my time in Central Illinois, and I always love to get back.
Thanks again. Mark Schanowski, Comcast Sportsnet in Chicago. It is 10:49. Have you thought about replacing the windows or doors at your home? How about a trip to the Pella Window Store, 1001 North Country Fair Drive in Champaign? Mike Mary and the folks at Illini Pella have been assisting homeowners and businesses for a long, long time. They do things the right way. There are a lot of things to consider when replacing your windows and doors, things like security, comfort, and convenience. Well, the Pella Window Store has many examples on the showroom floor in many styles and price ranges as well. And they'll keep you up to date on what's the latest, what some of the new products might be in their industry. You'll find all that at the Pella Window Store on North Country Fair Drive in Champaign. They're open Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, on Saturday by appointment, or you can check them out online at PellaOfChampaign.com, the Pella Window Store, Illini Pella Windows and Doors. We'll take a time out and be back with more Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk after this. Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk. One thing I like about this show is some of the conversations we have during the breaks. I just got a golf tip from Lauren on the perfect golf swing. He didn't say I needed it, but I got it anyway. You ripped off 7 or 8 swing thoughts, and I thought if you could go through all those, you're going to be standing over the ball for 2 minutes.
I know, that's why it's not a natural swing for me. I've got too many swing thoughts.
You didn't quit again this week, did you?
Yeah, oh yeah. Yesterday I quit.
Yeah, no, you told me you were out there hitting balls yesterday, so yeah, it must have been after that.
Right after that, I quit.
Again, speaking of golf, Mike Small and Steve Stricker playing on the Champions Tour up in Madison, Wisconsin. And both had nice rounds yesterday. Stricker is 5 under. He's tied for third. Smalley was 1 under, tied for 37th. They'll be going again today.
By the way, I saw where the new recruit, whose name I can't tell you, from Asia, is that right? Had a terrific round, terrific tournament.
He's from the Netherlands.
Netherlands, okay.
Jerry G is his name.
Jerry G?
Uh-huh.
You mean the basketball player?
No. Said the same way. Spelled his last name is spelled J-I.
Okay.
Yeah, Smalley talked to us about him.
Yeah.
And he said he's really good. And
well,
he'll be here this fall.
He must be, because I just saw where he won a tournament.
If we're talking about the same guy.
Sure we are. He's only bringing in one guy.
Yeah. He's got that Belgium-Netherlands area connection going again.
Right.
So he is, that's him. A couple of awards announced this week by the University of Illinois. The Dyke Edelman Award winners for 2018 and 19. Jordan Poulter again in volleyball, second straight year.
Well, yeah, she was automatic.
And Devin Quinn in track.
That was a tough one because Quinn ran a 10.01. Mm-hmm. I mean, almost a 10 flat. And I'd say it was a 10 flat. And when it's that close. But he finished 7th in the 100 meter dash nationally, so it made it a question whether is that a bigger accomplishment than Kovacevic had in tennis, where he reached the final four, or is it more than what Corbin did in running, having such a tremendous year running the football for Illinois last year? I don't know who I would have picked. I had a discussion with Scott Ritchie about it, and I'm kind of torn. I was kind of leaning toward Kovacevic, but I don't know. I mean, let's put it this way: it's the fastest 100 ever run in the Big Ten. That's pretty good.
Hard to argue with that.
Yeah.
And the Illinois Freshman of the Year announced this week: Io DeSumo and Corkamal Sukri. She's a golfer on the Illini golf team. And so those are some award winners. We'll take a timeout, one final timeout, back with some final words after this. Stay with us. So what are you going to do today? You watch a little baseball, you hope?
I hope to watch a little baseball this afternoon, but it sounds like they got a lot of rain in St. Louis. I got one for you here. Contrary to reports, there is nothing official about UConn joining the Big East. The Big East hasn't yet offered UConn the opportunity to move, but Illinois plays UConn in football this year. I just bring it up, and UConn's won some national NCAA basketball championships in in past years. We haven't had any real realignment for the last several years, and it could be coming again. You never know. Once one team moves, then it affects a lot of other teams, and you have the domino effect.
We'll keep our eye on that. Thanks to our guests this morning, Brandon Brown from Ann Arbor, Dan Hartlib, Will Leach, and Mark Schanowski. For Lawrence Tate, I'm Steve Kelly. Thanks to Blake Landa as well for helping us produce the program here on WDWS Champaign-Urbana. Have a good weekend, everybody.